Welcome back. This is episode 8 of the Fostering Financial Victories podcast. I am joined today by McCrite King, who is a wealth coach with the Foster Victor Wealth Advisors, and Tim Moxie, who is a CPA here in Greenville. So I want to give you a little bit of background on both of these folks before we get going and just tell you who you got that's going to give you some information today. We're going to talk about taxes a lot, which is an exciting conversation. Hopefully we won't bore you too much. So McCrite, he joined our team in 2019 after spending 14 years working with people like us from a different role. So you were with Prudential for a while and then decided to come over to the dark side and get into the advising side of things.
That's right.
So McCrite from Greenville, South Carolina, Clemson grad, which we'll talk about that in a minute. Tim, he is a CPA for nearly 20 years from Greenville, USC grad. Married to his wife Kelly with two boys, owns his own business here in town for about 5 years. Oh, we got a Lee Corso moment here.
And, had to pull that one out, didn't you?
Just saying.
Yeah, just stick it in there. Right? And so Tim works with clients all over Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina, small businesses and individuals alike. So thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you, Eric.
Our goal for today is to talk through some of the changes in the tax code that you've seen. And really give people some ideas of answering questions among the tax side of the world of what should they be thinking about right now from a strategy standpoint or the to-dos of tax season.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
I'm ready.
Tim, let's start with something light. Just give us a little bit of background. What how'd you get into accounting? What drew you into this world?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. Not many people, when they're in high school, set out as a lifelong goal and aspire to be an accountant, unlike like a doctor or a nurse or a teacher. I was no different. Went into college at USC, the Moore School of Business, and very early on, you're asked to pick a major and really had no exposure to much of anything. I did enjoy finance and things of that nature, but I had some relatives in the family who were accountants, and they seemed to have a pretty good grip on things in their life, and I said, well, I'll just do that one. And I got too far into it, and I couldn't pretty much change years and do something different at that point, so I just charged forward, and here I am.
Yeah.
20 years later.
20 years later, right.
Yeah. Time flies when you're having fun, I guess, right?
If you call it that, sure.
So we know this is your busy time of year. Not that you don't have busy other times of the year, but this is kind of the crunch time where everybody's calling your office saying, what do I need to do with taxes, right? Is there anything this big that's come up recently that people might want to be aware of?
Just be aware of.
Maybe a few things?
Just a handful of things. Some things are pretty much hot off the press within the last 48 hours. Some that have trickled in 2 or 3 months ago. Just relative small law changes that have happened, but they do have big impacts for certain demographics. And one thing in particular within the last 72 hours that in light of all the state of things is just that they've announced that there's a potential for a 90-day extension for payment of taxes for especially for individual taxes that are going to be due on April 15th timeframe, that if you have a difficulty paying, that the government will grant you a 90-day term to pay those taxes without any penalties and interest incurred if you cannot pay them on time.
So we're sitting here, it's March 19th. Just so everybody can get a grasp of what time this is. So we're supposed to be socially distanced from each other, apparently. We're not quite that far away.
This is not 6 feet.
I don't think we've got it.
We're all clean.
So, Tim, what do you mean by this 90-day delay? Is this a delay to where people don't have to file, or is it just if they have a payment due, they don't have to pay it?
Right. Eric, that's a very good question, and there's a lot of misinterpretation of what that has been put out there. And your taxes are still due business as usual on April 15th. The returns themselves are due. So if what is recommended is that you get an extension to file your taxes if you do not believe that you can necessarily file on time or pay on time. But we are still operating under the pretense that we need to proceed as business as usual. And if you have your taxes complete and are unable to pay, we file for an extension. Very easy thing to do, just a quick one form type thing that gets submitted to the IRS, grant you an immediate 6 months of extra time to actually file your taxes with the IRS. But what people don't often realize is if you get an extension, it's an extension of time to actually file your taxes, not an extension of time to pay.
Okay.
So interest and penalties traditionally start generating and start running on April 15th up until the time that you actually send them the check.
Got it.
And so that is what's being waived right now is the interest and penalties.
Mm. Okay.
Right, right. So Tim, tell us a little bit more. I mean, obviously this is breaking news.
That's breaking news, right.
Yeah, this is right off the press. But you know, we had some other big news that came out late last year, early at the beginning
sure,
of this year.
Sure, a lot of people forgotten about it all
yeah,
of a sudden.
Yeah,
now, right?
It's kind of got brushed under the rug with all this stuff here recently. But tell us a little bit about that, a couple of bullet points about the most recent legislation and what we should know there and be most aware of.
Right, right. And this is more commonly known as the SECURE Act. And it was actually two bills that were put together into one, and they called it the SECURE Act. And it was passed right just before Christmas time last year. And really, it's a pretty, really had two parts to it. On a minor level, it extended certain expired provisions or expiring provisions that the 2018 tax law either took out or set to expire, and extended them into 2020 and beyond some things. And then the major thing, though, was as it pertains to IRAs, RMDs, time frames when you're able to contribute, income restrictions, that sort of thing. So that had a pretty big impact.
Right, right. So one of the things that we've gotten asked a lot about is specifically around the required minimum distributions and what that looks like. So give us a little bit more context there with what the new rules are pertaining to required minimum distributions, or RMDs as they're most commonly referred
sure.
to.
So when you turn 70 and a half, that magic age, and you have things in 401ks, IRA type accounts, the government has mandated that you are required to start taking money out in the year in which you turn 70 and a half, traditionally speaking. And it's based on a formulation of market value, life expectancy, and that sort of thing. And so now, the rule says that if you turn 70 and a half under the prior rule, that you are required to start taking this money out over the rest of your life. And now that age has been increased to 72. So if you were already 70 and a half at the time this law was enacted, you still fall under the traditional rules. But now if you were not yet 70 and a half, you now have mm-hmm. until 72 to be required to pull money out.
Right, right.
That seems like a pretty big deal on the outside looking in.
Yes.
What happens if somebody does not do the required minimum distribution?
Well,
what if they forget?
If they forget. Thankfully, they have people like you to remind them.
That's right.
But at the same point,
if
they do forget, there is penalties that's involved where the IRS could technically take half of the account value as a penalty for not taking the money out. And so it's a forced distribution, but you don't actually get to keep it.
Okay.
Now, a lot of times there is relief if it is an inadvertent omission. I mean, their circumstances happen, and sometimes people, that's not in the front of their mind, especially if there's an issue of failing health or whatever, and they do grant relief in cases like that, but you need to be on the front end and initiate that on your own. You can take corrective action, that's right, but you do not want to miss this, that's
okay.
for sure.
Okay. With the required minimum distributions, there's another strategy that was involved at that age perspective that was enacted in 2018 with the qualified charitable distribution.
Yes.
Do those two pieces, because they were both based on that 70 and a half age.
That's right.
Do those two now both move to age 72, or does one affect
not.
The other?
Thankfully not at this point. The 70 and a half rule for the qualified charitable distribution there, thankfully that still remains.
So people can still do that.
Still okay. do that, take it out of an IRA. You're still able to do that, and it can still come out of the IRA dollars, and you can still get the favorable treatment for that.
Yeah,
very, very powerful tool for folks in that position.
Yeah. Well, one more question we get a lot is provisions around stretching IRAs. And obviously, we know that this had a major impact on the ability to do that. In layman's terms, what does that mean today versus what it looked like prior to the SECURE Act?
Yeah, prior to that, if you were somebody to inherit an IRA from another individual, you pretty much could stretch that out, like you said, the stretch IRA over your remaining life expectancy as you were getting required distributions over your life expectancy. Mm-hmm. Now that life expectancy table has been condensed and for the most part collapsed, you could say, to 10 years. And it's not necessarily a ratable thing over 10 years. You could do it at any portion that you like, but by year 10, when the clock strikes midnight, that money's got to come out.
Right.
So if anything, it does require even more careful planning on that standpoint, everybody has different income situations, and it could certainly wreak havoc on internal financial plans, financial aid packages,
yeah,
things of that sort.
So certainly something you want to be aware of if you were planning on leaving an IRA to a kid or a grandkid or...
Right, absolutely. And to a certain extent, that's also led to other segues for additional conversations with financial planners, with Roth conversions and things of that nature, where at least if the 10-year rules do come into play, that it's not necessarily a taxable detriment to the recipients.
Right.
But they still have to take it out within those 10 years,
The 10-year rule still applies, yeah.
So the Roth was a big planning tool that people would typically use prior to this bill going into place, to where they could leave it to a child and stretch it out over...
It would grow bigger than they were ever required
years.
To take it out, right?
Yeah, so now you're saying no matter how old the recipient is, it's got to come out in 10 years regardless. Okay, that's a big change.
Yeah,
it is a big change.
Big planning change.
Big.
Okay. Anything else in that SECURE Act that has come out that has got people's attention?
Well, one of the other things that kind of was a part of that whole thing was also that, you know, pretty much once you turned 70 and a half, you weren't able to actually fund IRAs any longer for that much.
Right.
Your ability to do that was turned off. And now, as long as you have what the Treasury defines as earned income, and that's basically the way I would put it in layman's terms is anything that you make that the IRS imputes Social Security and Medicare taxes on. So that would be W-2 wages, if you're a self-employed individual, 1099 contractor pay, those kind of things. As long as that's positive, you still have the ability to fund an IRA now, even though you might be over this RMD rule age.
Yeah. You still get a little tax break.
Just a little bit, right?
Okay.
You have to put it, I guess the thought was before is that why do you need to keep putting money in if you're going to have to put it right back out with the RMD rules when they trip you up in that light?
Yeah. So makes sense. And people are working a little bit longer now, too.
Right.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Well, that's really good info. I mean, it goes to show you when, you know, you hear about this stuff on the news, it's important to tune in and understand, like, how is it going to impact you? And having those conversations with your advisors about, hey, does this impact our plan? Do we need to do things differently as a result of this? And the sooner we have those conversations, the better.
The better it is, because, every day in my business I see this, and certainly in your business it works the same way. But as long as you have plenty of time to do something, you can get a lot more accomplished in a 3 to 5 year horizon than you can in a 2 to 3 week horizon on something like that. Some things just aren't necessarily as feasible to do, but as long as you have adequate time in your hands, you can have a much more improved result.
Yeah. Well, that really sort of segues into the next question. This is a little bit lighter. But you've been doing this for 20 years, right? So, you've seen a lot of stuff. So is there one thing that you can think of that's the biggest or most common tax mistake that you see people make?
Well, when you call it a mistake, it may be just a misunderstanding of the benefits is what I would often hear. But
right.
I hear a lot of times, don't worry, we'll pay for that. It's tax deductible. It's fine. And a lot of times the question that I ask or where I hear it come up in conversations, it's more around the economics of the whole deal, not necessarily the tax benefits, but a lot of times the misunderstanding of the subject matter is that if it's tax deductible, that it's a dollar for dollar reduction of your tax. And that is not, could not be further from the truth. It's actually more, it's a reduction of your income by which your tax is calculated on. So at the highest tax bracket that we operate under today, under the IRS rules, every dollar of expense that you have would only save you 37 cents in taxes. So you still are economically in the red.
Right. Right.
So I often question a lot of times, is this expense necessary?
Mm-hmm.
So the tax deduction versus the tax credit oftentimes gets mixed up.
Correct. So tax credits are always better.
Yeah.
Fair. Always better.
How do you get those?
Well, at the federal level, there's a lot of, you can see in a lot of the legislation that there's a lot of congressional intent to influence social and commercial behaviors.
Okay.
A lot of times what you see is, you see a lot of green energy initiatives, initiatives to hire certain types of workforce individuals who may have had a brush up with the law at some point in the past. It makes it difficult to hire them. They grant incentives to these businesses and individuals for investing in certain technologies, hiring these types of individuals to give people a second chance, have a greener environment, sustainability, research and development.
And that's just a dollar for dollar credit.
Those generally can be dollar for dollar reductions of your tax liabilities, mainly just to have the government support these kind of activities because it supports either the greater good or it's going to benefit people in some other way.
Okay. From an individual taxpayer's perspective, right, so this time of year, everybody's maybe still in a panic mode of you got to do your taxes in a few weeks.
Right.
You got some folks that are way ahead of the game and they've already done it, you know, 8 weeks ago. Most people are going to look at this and say, when do I need to hire a CPA or why would I need to hire a firm like yours? Can't I just do my taxes on my own? What's the difference?
Sure, yeah, and that's a greater problem that we're seeing today with technology and artificial intelligence and Google.
Sure.
People a lot of times try to do things on their own because there's so much information that they have available. And in some cases, in a lot of cases, they probably could do it by themselves if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. And to a certain degree, it might be fine. And what I often tell people is that, hey, you might not necessarily think you need a CPA, but it's really a good idea to have somebody take a look over your shoulder because there might be a lot of things that what you did on your own may not necessarily be incorrect. You could have done it differently and gotten a different result, or there might be other longer-term benefits that you are not necessarily taking advantage of if you didn't know that they were out there. And these question and answer programs aren't necessarily geared to do that.
So more of a planning discussion and strategy conversation rather than just the simple act of filing taxes would
right,
be
exactly.
Takeaway.
It's a lot harder to help somebody with their taxes and actually get them a better answer when the year has already passed and there's really not much you can do for it after the year is over with.
So
it's a lot better to do it on the front end.
Okay.
Have everything kind of out there where you can maybe change some things while there's still time between now and the end of the year to manipulate the results in your favor if there is things that you can do.
So maybe instead of waiting until, March 19th to start the conversation around previous year taxes, that maybe you start this in June.
Start
for
in June,
this
right.
year and know going into the end of the calendar year that, you know, strategically, you've already discussed what options are available right now with the tax code that could be pretty beneficial for you that you just may not be aware of.
Right, right.
That's
exactly.
what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Okay.
Would you say there's a certain income amount, Tim, that you see where it just makes sense to start engaging a CPA or certain set of circumstances where it's like, hey, now things are more complicated. It makes sense for what you're paying or what you're what you're paying for that you're getting the value out of it.
Right, exactly. I mean, and a lot of it goes down to every individual's personal circumstance. Mm-hmm. One thing I think we could all agree on as Americans that we all work too much and we have time poverty, that we don't have enough for ourselves to do certain things. And so sometimes, you know, taxes are, it's not something even myself, we don't wake up in the morning invigorated to do and ready
right,
to go.
For, right.
You know, I do it and it helps support my family, and so that's what keeps me going with it. But with all that being said, though, some people just don't have the desire to do it, and they would much rather somebody else do it, and because their time is more valuable to them than spending a whole weekend trying to figure out something.
Sure.
Now, along that front, now you asked the question about the income piece. Now, you might have somebody that makes a substantial amount of income and they only have one form. It comes from one employer, one W-2, and that's all that they have. It would be one of the simplest returns that we would have in that case. But you might have somebody else who may not make any income, but yet they've got several different inputs. They've got children. They have the healthcare exchange where they've gotten some sort of an advanced
right.
tax credit for a subsidy for the health insurance. They've got a rental property. You name it. On paper, it didn't look like they made any money, but they had one of the most complicated returns that we see.
Sure. Sure.
So it's kind of hard to gauge it based on income level, but normally we base it based on number of inputs, if there's a number of W-2s, if they have rental properties, investments in small businesses, partnerships, LLCs, S-corporations, where they get a Schedule K-1, investment accounts, where they get several 1099s from those.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these are 50 pages long, and they're difficult to navigate if you're not sure where to look.
Right, right.
So there's a little bit of a misnomer, I think, among most people when they start looking at, you know, taxes, and they see these tax brackets that get released at the start of the year. Can you explain a little bit of how those brackets work?
Sure. That question comes up all the time, where it's like, I sold something or I got a bonus at work, and are we going to go to an X tax bracket?
Right.
Yeah. And the biggest concern is that if you jump tax brackets, that all of a sudden, all of your income now all of a sudden is taxed at a higher percentage.
And, right.
And thankfully, that is not necessarily the case. Now, we have it in the United States what they call a graduated tax rate system, where I refer to the term as like bands, where pay ranges that certain tax percentage rates are applied at these pay ranges, and then they increase. So we have a 10% tax bracket, which starts at zero and it goes up to a certain threshold depending on how you're filing, and then after that you have the 12%, then a 22, then a 24, and so on. And so basically you have to go through all the various lower tier brackets first, and then as you make more money, your income is taxed at a higher rate. All of your income doesn't retroactively go to the higher rate immediately. It's just any income over and above a certain threshold.
Right.
Okay. So your effective tax rate, when you collapse everything down, when you say, okay, well, here's my income, here's my tax, I divide one into the other, here's my actual effective rate, it's not the tax bracket that you pay most times.
So if you get income where it bumps you up into, call it a 32% tax bracket, you're a little bit misled if you're saying, man, I'm paying 32% taxes now.
That's exactly right.
You're really not on everything.
Yeah, I mean, it could end up being more like 22 or 23% when you factor in all the... Now, if you were making $10 billion, your rate, the average would eventually creep more towards 37% or something. But
Okay.
I'd be okay with that.
I'd be okay with that, too. Right. <Yeah. laughs>
Okay, good.
So, Tim, kind of another, sort of like the first question to ask you, any opportunities that you see through your work with clients that are commonly missed, where you say, if we had had time to plan for that a little bit ahead of time, there was some things that most people are able to take advantage of?
Yeah, there's a lot more planning opportunities on the business side of things, or things that you may have been planning to do next year that, hey, from a timing standpoint, it makes more sense to do it now. We can monetize it from a tax standpoint and save some money now so we can maybe hire another person sooner rather than later. I mean, there's generally a lot of positives to tax deferral or accelerating or deferring things. On a personal level, though, a lot of it more is, like that qualified charitable distribution, Eric, that you talked about earlier. With the changes of the law in 2018, there is a lot of people who are no longer able to itemize their deductions, and they give a substantial amount of money to charitable organizations. And had they known about the qualified charitable distribution and taken advantage of that sooner, they would have gotten a much better tax answer. And that's where I've come in and y'all come in here to try to educate and show how important and powerful it can be, because it's not just a better tax answer. It could definitely yield other unintended good benefits. Some people don't realize that if you make over a certain amount of money that your Medicare premiums go up.
Sure.
And this is a way to get those numbers down. Yeah. So that you may fall under a certain threshold, and now all of a sudden your Medicare premiums drop.
Well, and it helps to satisfy those required minimum distributions.
Exactly, that too.
At the same
exactly
time, that so too. Really it's almost a three-pronged approach to being able to be charitably inclined if that's something that you're so led to do.
And many people in those positions, that's where the money is coming from to make said charitable donations anyways.
Yeah,
it's from
fair.
These IRA pools.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So think about the person who is 30 or 40 years old, and they're in that accumulation phase of life where they're working and saving and managing a household. The Roth IRA gets put into play. People talk about it a lot. I think a lot of times people will get them mixed up as far as when dollars are taxed, when they're not taxed. But on the back end, so when you are getting into that retirement phase, do you see a lot of benefits of using the Roth conversion method that's available now for people as they get into retirement? And right now, again, this is March 19th, we're seeing a down market. I know that's
now could be a now could be a, on paper a great time to really explore that option.
Okay, so
with values being down, you convert it to Roth. I mean, you've got a liquidity issue temporarily as far as how you pay the taxes on the conversion, but when this thing recovers and you've got this all in Roth dollars, you now could have a lot more money sitting there a year or two from now if the stock market recovers to a month ago levels.
Yeah, and you paid less in taxes.
And you paid less in taxes, exactly, in a complete legal fashion.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And the Roth, is that susceptible to the RMDs at all if you do the conversion after you've hit retirement? Is that still?
As long as it's still your Roth.
Okay.
The RMD rules do not come into play with the Roths. It's only when it becomes an inherited Roth IRA is when those actually do come into play.
Got it. Okay.
And so it's a great thing in retirement, as we've discussed in the past too, where it gives you just another bucket of money to be able to pull from in retirement when the strategy makes sense.
Okay.
So Tim, this is a question I have, and I expect you to have a definitive answer on this. In your humble opinion, which way do you think taxes are heading, right? If you were to think of it, and we were to look out 5 years or 10 years or maybe even 20 or 30 when it might impact us in retirement, give us your thoughts. Taxes going to be higher, lower?
I don't see them being any lower. I envision more taxes in the traditional sense that we see now in the income tax arena, but a lot of the other Western countries in the world, people don't realize we're taxed every day on almost everything we buy. There's taxes at the fuel pump that's baked into the cost per gallon. There's taxes on the food. There's taxes on restaurant food that you don't even realize it. Short term, I don't see it happening. At least a lot of these tax law provisions that came out in 2018 are set to sunset in 2025, 2026 timeframe. And some of that could automatically roll back to pre-2018 levels at that point without any sort of other intervention of any kind. Right. So if we could expect something to maybe happen in that case, but things could happen depending on, this is an election year. Next January, if Congress turns over, things could be entirely different.
Sure. Yeah, that's one thing that we know is that when we do see a new piece of legislation and we think it's going to be around for a while, and I heard someone say permanent in terms of how Congress defines it, it's anywhere from 4 to 8 years, right?
Right.
And that's why it's so important to stay on top of this and really kind of understand what's going on year to year.
That's right. And that's where things, the last big piece of legislation came. A lot of people actually elected to recognize more income in a given year because the rules were changing in the following year, where all of a sudden overnight their tax burden was going to go up substantially and nothing else had changed other than just the rules and the tax rates and such. So some people opted to accelerate income, pay tax on it sooner rather than later, which is normally unheard of.
Yeah. So switch gears a little bit, and I know this is a somewhat of a tangled conversation, so I'm going to approach it lightly, but from a business owner's perspective, what should they be thinking about on a tax strategy as it relates to how they're running their business on a day-to-day basis? If they've got employees, should they be looking at some sort of a group plan to put in place from a retirement perspective? What are the benefits of doing that on their side of the table? Obviously, we know the benefits from an employee's perspective is they have a chance to save pre-tax generally. But is there anything that from a business owner standpoint, they may be missing it if they're not having that conversation with somebody like yourself or just a planner in general?
Sure. Well, there is some financial benefits if you can meet the criteria for it. There's a very decisive bullet point list there, but there is some credits out there for a small employer who establishes a plan, number one. Generally it's hard to qualify for it, but it is out there. But in addition to it, there's the company match piece where, again, I'm going back to it's tax deductible, but at the same point, it's a commitment that the employer has to the employee. So the intangible benefits are is that the company is engaging and committing to the employee group and hopes that you have staff retention and you can attract the better talent to come and work for you, that sort of thing. And in addition to it, it's fostering that whole culture of, hey, you need to be a good steward of your finances here. Gone are the days of that our grandfathers used to work when the company would fund a pension plan and everybody was taken care of when they retired. Now they've all shifted to these defined contribution plan platforms and everybody's almost responsible for their own retirement now.
Yeah, so the defined contribution, just so people are aware, that's more of a reference to a 401k or a simple IRA, whereas the pension is going to be more of a defined benefit plan, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And in this case, too, it's just a way that the companies are wanting to pay somebody more money. It's kind of locked up temporarily in a box. It's their money. They can have it. They can access it if they want to. But they have to pay penalties and such on it if they take it out before they turn 59 and a half.
Okay. Is there anything else, McCray, that you can think of that, you know, our listeners may find valuable from a tax general perspective? I think we've hit on a lot of topics from personal to business. Thoughts?
Yeah. Well, you know, how about this, Tim? I think this will be a good, you know, just reminder. What happens if I don't pay my taxes on time?
Oh boy. Are they going to come knocking at the door?
I'm asking for a friend, right?
Yeah, asking for a friend. Yeah, just wanted to hurt it at a barbecue, right?
That's
yeah.
right.
Well, I mean, thankfully, the guys with guns aren't going to show up at your door.
Right.
Hopefully
that's,
not.
That's good.
And if they do,
yeah.
that you might be into other things that beyond that. But with that being said, usually what happens is that if we file, so we would file your return first, and I gave you the stuff and said, hey, you need to send this check on to our friends at the IRS. And I sent the return off on your behalf via e-file, and next thing you know, 3 weeks later, you call me up and say, hey, I got this letter in the mail from the IRS, and I don't know what it means. Would you mind telling me what this is about? So you send it to me, and I look at it, and normally it would say, the first letter would say something of the language, we've received your tax return, but we have not yet received your payment. Will you please kindly remit it to this address? And in a very nice tone. And then 30 days go by, and then the tone gets a little bit harsher.
Mm-hmm.
You owe us this money. We've taken the liberty of charging you a little bit of extra interest on said money. Please send it within 30 days. And then you get maybe one or two other letters like that. And then at one that says, we are intending to levy your assets type deal. And normally at that point, the IRS sends it to their collections division, and you could end up getting a garnishment.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of thing from your employer. So the point of the story here is don't ignore it. If you're having a difficulty in payment or whatever, the IRS has a lot of payment plan options that are out there. They don't know to give you an option if you don't ask for one at the same point.
Right.
But a lot of times, it's kind of funny. I get the letters from somebody, but by the time I get the letter, it's normally the intent to levy.
Mm-hmm.
Or we've placed a lien on something, and it's communicated to me that this is the first letter of this kind that they've received. And
yeah.
I already know this is the fifth letter that they've received.
That's the one that got their attention.
Yes, yeah, that's the one that they did open and got a little
right.
worried.
So pay the man.
Yes, pay the man, right?
Pay the man, or at least work out a payment arrangement
yeah,
to
right.
do so.
Well, so I know that in this day and age, there's a lot of attempts at some fraudulent activities. I personally have gotten phone calls saying it's from the IRS. Do the IRS
sure.
actually call you?
They wouldn't call a general person, no.
They're going to send
you a letter,
rarely
call
right?
me.
They're typically going to mail you a letter.
They always will mail you a letter.
Or email, mm-hmm. like you get the email coming from the IRS.
Yeah, from the IRS or the FBI, right.
right.
Same sender, right. No, they will never call you under any circumstances. They do not communicate via email either. They always send all their communications, you know,
U.S. mail.
Yeah. U.S. mail.
Okay.
Otherwise, you have to go in person. And now, not to say that there isn't fraud that's gone on with U.S. mail as well. I've actually seen several letters that look and feel just like the IRS stuff. And somewhere on there, the phone number that's listed is not the legitimate IRS number. And these are not your average Joe criminals here who are doing these kind of things
right.
on something like that.
Yeah.
So always be careful. You know, be diligent about everything yourself. Don't voluntarily never give out your social security number or banking information just to anybody, of course. If you have any questions, certainly call somebody like myself or any other accounting or tax professional. They can help guide you through it, or just call the IRS directly at their number that's on their website.
Okay. So don't fall for all the emails.
Don't fall for it. If it sounds too good to be true from a tax standpoint, it always is. It always is.
It's just good to be reminded of that.
All right. So as we wrap this up, Tim, I'm going to give you a few minutes to just tell everybody where they can find you if they want to reach out to your team and if they want to engage with you on a different conversation to talk in more detail.
Sure, of course. Our phone number is 864-877-9022. We are located in the heart of the upstate area. Our office is officially located in Greer, South Carolina. We can be found on the web at www.upstatecpallc.com.
Okay.
Perfect. Feel free to call us if you have any questions or concerns about anything. Happy to help you.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you for being here. As we wrap this up, there's a few fun pieces of this that you aren't aware of yet. but I first want to pull out just a takeaway from a planning standpoint that I heard you two guys talk about. to me, it seems like for the general individual, just be aware of the changes that are happening, right? The tax code seems to be changing drastically from year to year. At least it has in the last 2 or 3 years. Be aware of it. Take a little bit of time to read on the changes. Seek out some information from somebody else if you want more clarity on it. But just know how it could impact you, or maybe it doesn't impact you. Just be aware of it. I think that's the biggest takeaway that I can give you guys as you take this episode in. All right, so Tim, we've asked every person on this short season of podcasting these same questions. I'm going to ask you the two questions. So, biggest financial mistake you learned the hard way? Put you on the spot.
The hard way, yeah. Well, to a certain degree, I mean, it's rushing into something. I mean, I could say to a certain degree when I acquired an investment in a business that I wouldn't say it was a terrible mistake, but I could have gotten off a lot better if I had allowed for a little bit more time on some things, and probably, I think I overpaid.
Okay, so do more due diligence?
A little bit more due diligence, and the way I rationalize it myself is that I paid a premium because I needed something more immediately, and I didn't have the luxury of waiting, you know, 6 to 12 more months to do something.
Got it, and it worked out okay.
And it did, it did. So,
all right, so second question. If there's anything in the world you could buy, regardless of cost, what would it be?
Ooh, man.
This is a really fun one.
Maybe just like a flying car. I've always wanted since.
Flying car. Okay. So I'll tell you that some of the answers we've gotten so far, that's pretty dialed into where most of them are. Usually it's been the plane. Everybody wants the plane for some reason.
Everybody wants to get around
get quicker. The time lapse. Yeah. All right, last thing. Last two things you spent money on.
Amazon.
Did you buy some Amazon or did you order
bought something
you
from
have to
Amazon?
Be more specific with that.
My wife bought something. I don't know. There's a box that comes every day.
Every day.
And Zaxby's for lunch yesterday.
Okay. All right.
Went through the drive-thru.
Yeah,
there we
go. Good to support restaurants this time with the takeout.
Right? No eating inside right now.
No.
All right. So as we wrap this up, thank you for spending time with us today. We hope it's been helpful to talk through a pretty, what could be a non-exciting topic of taxes.
Right.
If you have suggestions or questions on anything in the future that you'd like for our team to cover, or if you would like to reach out to us directly, you can find us on our website. You can email us directly from there, fostervictorwa.com. You can also follow along on Instagram at fostervictorwealthadvisors. Thanks for spending time with us. Hit the little subscribe button if you would, and you'll get notifications of our next episode when it comes out. But we'll look forward to catching up with you soon. Information contained in this podcast was intended for general use, not to be used as specific advice. For content tailored to your personal situation, please contact one of our wealth coaches.